Tuesday evening in Dublin, it's an evening with Alan McGee. He'll be interviewed on stage and it's question answer with the audience as well. Starts at 7:30 at the Sugar Club in Leeson Street in Dublin, and you can get tickets on ticketmaster.ie. And why am I telling you all this now? Because Alan McGee is with us on the programme to talk about, I'm not too sure, Alan, necessarily, because I tell you, even though I could go through every single thing in terms of Oasis, Primal Scream, My Bloody Valentine, The Libertines, Happy Mondays, Cast and everything else, Creation Records is who I'm talking about. Your name completely and absolutely sewn up with the whole lot of them. What about Alan McGee, Alan, in the middle of the year 2019? Where are you at?
I've got a film coming out, the Edwin Welsh and Danny Boyle, I've got hold of from a book. I've got Creation 23, a little 7-inch label that I've started putting records out again by little bands. I manage a few bands, and I'm doing my own a kind of spoken word tour sort of thing. So that's what I'm up to.
Okay, just let's take a look at Creation 23. You're not one of these people who wants to kind of create a giant band necessarily and take it through like the mad days of the late 90s of Oasis or anything. You just want to get them, what, the first leg up on that? You don't necessarily want them to run away, though, if they become successful, do you?
No, I mean, at the moment, I've just only got back into it again, Dave.
Yeah.
Putting records out last August. So I'm just seeing what's. I've been just managing bands. I've been managing a few bands for about the last 5 years, you know.
Yeah, and can we just roll back for a second there? You want to get these bands, bring them out 7-inch. Are we talking about bringing out singles, yeah?
Yeah, 250 copies. Yeah, it's great.
Really, 250 copies. And it is 7-inch singles. I mean, are they for promotional purposes? Like, do people go into a shop and buy one?
Yeah, they're available for £8 off the Creation 23 website.
You know, I'm just thinking, 250 copies. When you think back to 94 to 98, you were selling 50,000 albums a week. And in fact, sometimes it might have been up to 100,000 a week for 4 years.
A bit more than that sometimes, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, so like it's a bit of
We had a mad five years. That was, when Oasis really properly started selling, it was like, yeah, it was mad. You know, because you had Definitely Baby, people were still picking up on that in like 97, 98, and then you had
What's the Story?
And then Be Here Now came out and was bigger. Yeah, at one point, 97, 98, I think our turnover at the record company was about £40 million. You know, I mean, it's mad.
Do you know, when you think about your time with Oasis and what you did, you once said something that I pick it up wrong. It's something along the lines of the fact that, like, you never felt you were some kind of a captain of industry type. You were just a chancer who kind of got lucky, but then you really knew what you were doing because, you know, you were with the same kind of people who knew what they were doing as well. And it all just happened really quick. But you only got a certain amount of years out of that with Oasis, and you couldn't have wanted any more. Even the touring in the States, 8 weeks nearly killed you.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it's all good stuff, man. I mean, it's like you put these records out and you just, some of them blow up and they take you to another part in your life and you move on, don't you? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, thank God for rock and roll, you know what I mean? Changed my life.
Well, when rock and roll changed your life, one of the first things was buying a single like Get It On. But one of the biggest things
of all, this is
where we both absolutely meet in the middle, and I couldn't agree with you more. In two words, The Clash.
Amazing. Yeah, all these bands were amazing, though. You know what I mean? The glam bands were amazing, like T-Rex, Slade, Bowie, Alvin Stardust, all amazing. And then and I loved Gilbert O'Sullivan. He was Irish. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. And then the punk stuff, like the Pistols, the Clash, the Jam, the Buzzcocks, the Ruts, you know, just all brilliant bands.
But when you talk, like even Gilbert O'Sullivan, he was the biggest selling, I think, pop artist in 1972 and that year in the UK alone. When did you came down to London from Glasgow at around the age of 19 or so? You were still a teenager. When was that?
1980. And I came down with Andrew Innes, who was going to throw me out of the band. I was a little bass player and Andrew was a guitar player. We were going to pick a drummer up in London, and he was 17 and he was going to throw me out the group if I didn't come to London. And we both came down, and then eventually I got Creation together, and then eventually I put him in Primal Scream. That's what happened.
But what was the name of the band? The Laughing something or other, was it?
The Laughing Apple.
The Laughing Apple, okay. But within The Laughing Apple, I've got to be honest, Em, I thought I knew a lot about... Okay, I've never heard of you. I never did hear of them. But the point about it is that, did you learn what I would call a process there? How to produce, how to master, how to cut, how to
100%, promote. Dave, yeah.
That's
yeah,
really that's why what you, because you had yeah. to do it and you did do it. It was DIY yeah. and that was the way, yeah. yeah. And did yeah, you, no, you're saying you applied that part to what I said later on, which is 4 years of up to 100,000 sales a week for every week.
Yeah, but in the beginning, though, I learned to produce records, master records, you know, design the sleeves, blah, blah, blah. I did the whole thing, and then I realised, if I can do that for myself, I can do that for other people. And then I just started doing it, and then we put out 10, 11 singles, and, you know, nobody really cared, and I put out Jesus and Mary Chain, it blew up, and then,
yeah,
you know, we that went on. I sort of learned to become a manager. I managed them for, was 23, 24, 25, 26, and then you know, I signed the Valentines, I signed House of Love, and then we got gold records with them, and then we just built it up, and then eventually broke Primal Scream, and then Ride, Sugar, St. Etienne, Boo Radley's, I built it up.
And was there a scheme at the beginning for you to be able to, like, there was some kind of a, I don't know what it was, like a Conservative Party thing where they paid you a grand?
Yeah. Enterprise allowance.
That's it, right.
Yeah.
So you were well able to avail of that, let's say. I mean, also, even around the time, if there were homeless people, sorry, I know I'm jumping here a bit, but you are very much involved in Musicians Against Homelessness. Do you think that the homeless situation now, that there isn't the same thing of taking certain people off the streets and helping them, that there's kinds of people on the streets in some ways now, and it's kind of, that there is now, with most people, and this is one of the biggest problems, an acceptable number?
No, I think it was in the 70s, Dave. It was called squatting. That's Joe Strummer was a squat guy, and I was a squat guy. We came down. I was 19. I was penniless. I had £5 in my pocket, but I managed to persuade this good-looking woman that I could move into her squat with her, and that was it. I was actually all right after that. You know, I mean, I got 6 months in the squat, got the upgrade to a bed set, and then we just carried on, you know.
And now with Musicians Against Homelessness, what do you do, or what does it do, or what is it trying to say?
Well, it's raised a lot of money, actually. It raises about $100,000 a year, right. And it's been going 3 or 4 years. I mean, I do very little. I mean, I'd put my name to it and,
sure,
launch some gigs for them, you know what I mean? You know, but, I mean, the woman that runs it's amazing, Emma Rule. They've raised quite a lot of money. I mean, the money doesn't go through them and they take wages. The money goes straight to the charity, you know?
Yeah, I think probably one of the things I'm saying is the difference from the past, and I could be wrong, is that homelessness is kind of, has been normalised almost.
It has
nowadays,
been, yeah.
Kind of, you know, it's an accepted thing.
But, I mean, Britain's crazy, Dave. I mean, I dare say Dublin's probably the same kind of thing, but it's like, you know, you're just, working class people are just, you know, they're written off, essentially, you know. I mean, they're taking them all off benefits, and, you know, they're just statistics at this point. And then if you really don't have the backup of your family, which a lot of people don't have, you know what I mean, then you end up getting put in suspension, I think it's called, and then, you know, you end up homeless, a lot of the people. And then when you end up homeless, the only way to sort of nullify yourself is through drugs, isn't it? You know, it's kind of crap, you know.
Did you, I mean, like, you were homeless as such when you went to London, weren't you?
I was essentially homeless,
So
I mean, because I lived in a squat, there's a mad logic with me that I go, oh, I wasn't homeless, but yeah, I was homeless. Joe Strummer was homeless back in the early, 75, wasn't he, when he lived in the Notting Hill squats.
And Glasgow itself, the Glasgow that you had left, 60s Glasgow, pretty bleak, I imagine.
Yeah, it's horrible, too violent, man. I mean, it was like, I was witnessing people like getting stabbed and stuff like that. It was horrible, you know what I mean?
And did you go through all the alcohol and drugs and depression and anxiety, and do you feel you came through the other side because you got kind of lucky and you did very well with it?
I definitely got lucky. I don't know. I mean, I just was... I just love grafting, man. I mean, like, you know, I'm going to do 60 of these shows this year, and they're talking about, you know, after that film comes out, they're talking about booking me out for like 120 shows. I mean, I'm a bit of a freak of nature because I actually like working really, really hard.
Right.
But so not everybody's like that. But so I suppose that work ethic for me maybe sobered me up eventually. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah, because, you know, there's one thing about Glasgow, and the big stories of you meeting Oasis for the first time and all the rest. There was one thing about it being the city of culture at the time. And so the pubs were open basically kind of 21 hours a day, isn't that it?
Yeah.
So therefore, when you went out one night, I don't know what it was, like, what time were they on at this? They were called Oasis, were they?
Yeah. And it was I wandered in, and they were in Liam was in a Man City blue tracksuit, And I looked at him and I thought, oh, he must be the drug dealer, definitely. You know what I mean? And then I looked at Bonehead and what, he must be the singer, you know? Yeah. And they wandered on up. Eventually, they intimidated the security into letting them do the show. It was 11 of them and two security. And they wandered up. I wandered up just to see what it was kind of going to be like. I don't even know why I'd done it. You know, we probably had nothing better to do and I was waiting for my own little bands to come on. And it started up and they'd started with Rock and Roll Star. Went into Bring It On Down, went into Up in the Sky, and then finished on I Am the Walrus. And at that point, I went to Coily, who's the manager? They didn't even have a manager. And I went, all right, okay, who's the boss? And I went, Noel. And I went to see Noel, and I went, do you want a deal? And he went, who are you? And I went, McGee, Creation Records. And he went, okay. And that was the beginning.
And did you shake on it?
Yeah, it was literally, you know, it was like that, Dave. It was really, really, I kind of went away from that thing thinking, did that really happen? And actually, because I was pissed that night, because I was still drinking, I actually thought, maybe it was a drink. Maybe it wasn't that good. But then I met them and then it was that
but
good.
You what know was I mean? Creation Records at that time? Was that She's the Mary Jane kind of stuff?
No, it was Primals.
Oh, Primals.
Primals and Ballantine. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Okay. And then, so you shake on this with Noel, the rest of the band say yeah as well or whatever, and you sign Oasis to Creation and the rest is history, right?
Yeah, man, yeah, yeah.
God almighty. Okay, so the manager-wise, Liam is now with Debbie, right?
Yeah, man, yeah.
And Noel is still with the
Marcus
guy. Yeah, and he's been there all the way up, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's a good manager, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, indeed. And do you think that like we'll see at Glastonbury 2022 or 3 and, oh, here they are, Oasis are back. That'll be the one. If they did, like the best way to announce a massive 100-date worldwide tour would be start in Glastonbury.
You know. I don't think it's happening anytime soon. At least you're laughing. At least you get a sense of humour about it, Dave.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have. Because I'll tell you one thing. The stuff that's been happening with them in the last few years, would it be fair to say that it's a bit more real than any of the kind of, which really was just banter from years ago?
Oh, no, they're at each other's throats at the moment. Hopefully one day it'll stop, you know what I mean, you know?
Did you see much of that? I mean, that 8-week tour of the States...
Not really, you know, because when it was going on, look, of course they had bad arguments and everything, but nothing like now. I mean, it's sad that it's went there because it's brothers, you know what I mean? That's what's sad about it, you know?
Yeah, I'd say they'll get there all right. Now, let me take a look at something else here. Earl's Court, 1995.
Genius.
Just tell me exactly why. Well, wait, hold on. It's not necessarily genius. It's just a gig in one way. But there's a moment when it comes together in your life sometimes. You're looking at a band, you go, oh my God, could it get any better than this?
You're scary, Dave. Have you been looking inside my mind? You're the most researched person I've ever been interviewed by. You're a freak.
God. Okay, and you were standing there with your wife.
Yeah, I know. I think that was the best time I ever saw them, to be honest. They were just incredible that night. And it was a funny gig as well, because Madonna and U2 all came to see Oasis that night, and that was the point I went, this is probably happening, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, right, indeed. But I mean, like, the whole idea of that approach to it all, the indie approach, like, I mean, the idea of indie shops, indie radio programmes, indie newspapers and that, is there a lot more corporatization than I realised, probably? I mean, like, the really, indie isn't as alive as it should be, is it?
Well, it isn't. I mean, there's like lots of people are just doing it for the and doing it themselves. Like, I mean, there's probably 500 Alan McGee's all over Britain and Ireland doing their thing. Do you know what I mean? So it probably is quite alive and well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but not many releasing 7-inch singles.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe not. But
by the way, are you a Spotify person? Are you?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love Spotify. I love Spotify as a consumer, but I think it pays dreadful. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's a joke. Anyway, okay, let's take a look. You mentioned Primal Scream, obviously. Primal Scream made Screamadelica, and most people always bring up the name of the producer when Screamadelica came out, and it takes away from the band a bit. But were you stunned when the band... I mean, I go, sorry, that's Primal Scream when I heard that double M. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was just happy for them, to be honest, because I grew up with these guys. You know, I went to school when I met them when I was six, and then, you know... Because they're all a little bit like a year younger than we all went to Mount Florida primary, and then when we all went up to King's Park, Bobby Gillespie moved from Springburn to Cathcart, where I lived, and because I'd started out in Govan Hill, and then we all met at the school, and we used to go and see the football, and then we went to see, I took him to his first gig, which was an Irish band, Thin Lizzy, and we both went to see Thin Lizzy, and Phil Lynott Sean, he's a shiny bass right into Bobby Gillespie's face. And after that, he said to me, I'm going to be a rock star. And I went, why is that? And he went, because he anointed me. I don't think he used a word as big as that when he was 14. But essentially, he went, I was anointed, I was chosen. You know, yeah, I'm like, really? Right. Okay. Yeah, and he still talks about that today. If we interview him next time, go, McGee told me that story about the bass. And I bet you he goes, oh, yeah, you know.
Well, that's as good as anybody who pretended to have seen the Sex Pistols in Manchester. 5,000 people that saw them. Oh, sorry, only 50. Anyway, where was I? Yeah. The whole idea then, like, of what you do and what you are in terms of managing. Just finally, a couple of things I want to mention about that, because, you know, would you be like, when you think of, you know, Branson starts this mail order business and he gets Tubular Bells and it sells trillions what do you call the movie with the head going around that took it up? Anyway, that took up the music too and it made absolutely huge. The Exorcist.
Oh, The Exorcist, yeah.
So suddenly it was absolutely huge, etc. But he jumped on that and kept being bigger and bigger and bigger, and Branson was, you know, studios and things. Are you more of a Daniel Miller at Mute or a Seymour Stein kind of person?
I just like music, man. Yeah, I don't think I'm like, I'm like anybody, I'm a little bit like Seymour, do you know what I mean? But I just do my own thing, you know. I mean, my trajectory is weird. I agree, you know what I mean? Because it's like, after all these years now, they're making a film about me and I'm probably going to be more famous than I've ever been, you know, and it's a bit weird being that guy, you know what I mean? But I'm kind of into it as well. It's cool.
Yeah, just tell me about the film again. What is it and when are we going to see it?
Well, Danny Boyle and Irvin Welsh are doing this movie about my book. And Irvin, about 5-6 years ago, said to me, I love your book, you're a great writer. And I was like, I can't write. Anyway, he licensed it and we went and he decided that we were going to, like, you know, make a film. And I was like, whatever, Irvin. And I kind of put up with it, you know, for quite a long time because I see him socially quite a lot. And then about 6 weeks ago, we were always short of the money, Dave. Probably about a million short of the money, always. And I never thought it was getting made. And then he went, we've got Danny Boyle. And within 6 days, we had 3 offers to fund the film. So we're
Danny
going with Sony.
That's fantastic.
And all these people are saying it's the best script, it's the best set of people, you know, it's such a team. And we're just thinking, the only thing we've added, we've not changed the script, was Danny Boyle. It got funded off of Danny Boyle, you know what I mean?
There you go, that's what it does, all right. Well, listen, we're talking about An Evening with Alan McGee. That's who we're talking to here right now. A lot more stories, I'd say, coming up on Tuesday. A lot that you can't tell us now. In fact, I'm going to ask you one for now, because I might as well, because I've often asked, favourite album of the 90s, and for me it's Loveless by My Bloody Valentine. Kevin Shields, Discuss.
Well, he's a genius, isn't he?
Discuss the rest of it.
I signed him January 1988, and I'd seen them twice before. I'd seen them midway through 86. It was okay. Kevin wasn't singing. There was a singer, you'd probably remember him, Dave, a guy called Dave Conway. I think he went on to write books. He was a singer in My Bloody Valentine midway through 86. It was good, but I didn't make a move on them. Then I saw them about a year later in Great Portland Street, and it was a pretty shocking gig. It was terrible.
That's
to be
really weird to say that, because I've seen My Bloody Valentine, I absolutely hated the gig, but I loved the album.
All right, well, no, this is way before anything.
They hadn't
made a good record at this point.
It's way before isn't anything even,
way before. This is 87, man.
Yeah.
So it wasn't very good. So I was like, oh, whatever. So then they said, do you want to play with us in Chatham Town Hall? And we were like, yeah. But I mean, we were just really like not into it. Me and Dick were like, oh, that's, you know, that's an anorak group. And we went, and they played before us, and they played, and it was like Husker Du, you know, 8 miles high. It was that vibe. It was so brutal. And I was like, we've got to do it. And he was like, yeah, we've got to do it. So we went into the dressing room and said to Kevin, who were pals with him and Colm, and went, well, we want to sign you. And that was the beginning of it. We made it Isn't Anything. And he made it for $7,000, actually. He made it for nothing. And it did really well. Went gold.
Well, so, what I was thinking before, you go any further, no wonder he points out the price. How much did Loveless cost you?
About $270,000. Back in the day, that was a lot of money. And
well over $1 million in today's money.
Yeah. And, it was great. You know, I mean, you know, we just built it up. And it was complicated when we were making this studio album. Kevin's, you know, he can be difficult, and I was banned for the studio.
Oh, yeah, I know you were. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it was just one of these things, whatever, man, you know. And, you know, we put the record out. I knew it was a good record, but it's just, that's one of these records, it's it gets better every year you listen to it. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's a great record.
It really is, loveless. It's a classic album, right? I mean, like,
probably the best record I've ever put out.
Right, and by the way, if
probably the best record I'll ever put out. You know what I mean?
If anybody wants to find out the answer to the fact that Kevin Shields might have been abducted by aliens, you're going to have to wait until this coming Tuesday night at the Sugar Club in Dublin, at the bottom of Leeson Street, Stephen's Green direction. There, of course, Ticketmaster.ie tickets. Alan McGee, onwards and upwards. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million, Alan.
All right, man. Thank you, Dave. Cheers.